You're listening to the Community Mindfulness Project. The Community Mindfulness Project is a collaboration between Community Wellbeing North Canterbury Trust, Mindfulness North Canterbury, and Logan Smythe and Associates, bringing free science-based mindfulness and wellbeing courses, workshops, and podcasts to North Canterbury. Made possible by AIA Vitality.
It's really about treating yourself with the same care and concern and compassion that you would do your mate, your friend.
I'm Jess Davidson, and with me today is Kate Brandon Adams from Mindfulness North Canterbury. Kate is a registered mental health nurse and mindfulness teacher who lives in rural North Canterbury. In her 27 years of practice, Kate has specialised in holistic approaches to mental health and well-being, addiction recovery, and mindfulness. In this second episode of the Community Mindfulness Project, Kate will be talking about how to be your own mate and the research and science behind self-compassion. Can you explain, please, Kate, what you mean when you say self-compassion? What does that mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not common language really yet, is it? And that's why, you know, I often say to people it is like being a bit more of your own mate or being a bit more on your own side.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like just, and I always say a little bit, you know, because otherwise we get all perfectionistic about it and then we get self-critical that we're not self-compassionate enough. So, it's really about treating yourself with the same care and concern and compassion that you would do your mate, your friend. Yeah. And what I found over the years of teaching it is that people treat themselves really, really differently to how they treat others. Yeah. And, you know, they say some shocking things to themselves, which they would never dream of saying to someone else. And so self-compassion is really about those moments where we're struggling, when things are difficult, where they're painful, you know, when we've messed something up or something's really hurting. And interestingly, for some of us, those, instead of those being the moments where we show ourselves compassion, we actually can end up doing the opposite.
Yeah.
We actually turn on ourselves and add this whole other layer of judgment and more self-criticism. So you end up with the thing that's already hurting and then us kind of, you know, layering on this judgment and criticism on top. Mm. We end up with kind of, you know, double the amount of difficulty and pain at our own hands. Mm.
So is self-compassion the same as self-care?
Mm. So in my experience, especially in healthcare, is you know, self-care is talked about a lot and how important self-care is, and of course it is. It is very important.
Mm.
But self-care and self-compassion kind of have a slightly different focus.
Right.
So self-care, in my understanding, is kind of things that we do that support us and resource us. It's a bit like sort of maintenance, you know, of making sure that we eat well and move and, you know, have, I don't know, regular massages or whatever it is that we need to do to kind of keep ourselves well.
Mm.
But the thing is that when something difficult is happening in our lives right here, right now, you can't rush off and go and have a massage, you know. It's like,
I wish.
You know, it's like, it's not always possible, you know. It's kind of like, so what do we do right in the moment when there's something difficult happening? And that's where the self-compassion comes in. This is kind of like this sort of basically this thing that we're able to offer ourselves right in the moment. And we can offer it to ourselves. We don't need to go off and get it somewhere else. So self-compassion is what we give ourselves in the moment as it hurts, because it hurts. And, you know, Dr. Kristen Neff, who's predominantly, you know, one of the people that this work comes from, is she talks about noticing when something's difficult and, first of all, you know, acknowledging that this is difficult right now, and offering ourselves, may I be kind to myself in that moment. And also the importance of reminding ourselves that this is the human experience. We all struggle. And in fact, one of the things that actually really unites us as human beings is that life's sometimes really difficult, you know. What I like about the self-compassion practice is that, again, it's not about adding something foreign to ourselves. It's actually about reconnecting with something that we've already got. And in this case, something that we literally, physiologically are wired to do. We are physiologically wired to care and to connect and to soothe. The problem is that our cultural conditioning means that we're just giving it to others and we're not giving it to ourselves. Professor Paul Gilbert talks about that we have what's called a mammalian caregiving system. So we have a number of systems. One is our threat system, one is our kind of reward system, and the other one is our mammalian caregiving system. So what this means from evolutionary terms is that we're literally wired to care, to connect, and to soothe, which makes sense, doesn't it? Because we come from, we're relational, we're tribal.
Yeah.
You know, we want to connect, we want to partner up. And, of course, we need to have the sensitivity and the desire to move towards soothing pain and caring, especially for our young, because for quite a while they can't care for themselves. And so you can imagine, you know, it wouldn't go well, would it, if we didn't feel the urge to care for our young. So what he's saying is that physiologically this is all part of us, this system. And it's all to do with this kind of natural bonding and attachment. It's all to do with, you know, kind of going all gooey over babies and in my case kind of like, you know, furry animals on Facebook. And, you know, it's all the same stuff. It's about this kind of warm, fuzzy, connecting sort of feelings that we have of wanting to be connected and wanting to soothe others' pain. So what's really interesting is that when this system does get activated, we release a number of chemicals, and some of these will be familiar to people. So one of them is oxytocin.
Mm-hmm.
So as we know, oxytocin is, well, I sometimes call it the kind of the huggy drug, you know. It's the one that makes us kind of feel connected and, as I said, go gooey over furry animals on Facebook, you know. It's kind of, it feels good, yeah. The other one, interestingly, that we also release is endorphins. So if you think about it, endorphins are our natural painkillers. And what's interesting is that in our system, emotional pain and physical pain are seen as the same thing. And so you can start to see that our natural system is equipping us to feel connected and to soothe pain. Yeah? And on top of that, those chemicals actually are known to reduce cortisol levels, which means they're anti-stress. So here we are with this natural system that knows how to soothe pain, how to connect, and how to actually reduce our own threat system and stress. And what's really interesting about our physiology is it's this idea of compassion isn't separate for others or self. It's just all one thing. It doesn't care whether it's you or someone else that it's secreting oxytocin for, you know. It's all the same system. It doesn't differentiate between your pain or my pain. So this is what the key of all of this is that it's really important is that this system does not it's not just for soothing others, but it's for soothing ourselves as well. It's a bit like a soothing balm that we're carrying around with us all the time. But of course, most of us aren't using it.
No, yeah? We're using it for others and
exactly.
Ourselves.
We're going around dishing it out to everybody else. So of course, you know, why are we not using it? Often the reason that we're not using it is because of our cultural conditioning. And I can only speak for myself, but certainly it was not the thing that I was taught to do. And in fact, there was a negative connotation to it. Yeah? There's all sorts of ideas about why that was not okay to be kind or compassionate to yourself, and why it was really good to be kind and compassionate to other people. And so, of course, if we're marinated in that culture, then we're not going to know any different. Yeah, that's just how we think it is. So in some ways, we've therefore been conditioned out of using our own soothing system.
Which is crazy.
And of course, the thing is then that makes us more vulnerable to finding other things external to try and soothe ourselves.
Right.
Yeah? And that's then links in with my addiction work. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, we're looking for things to try and soothe our own system. So this is really what this sort of self-compassion practice is around. It's about reconnecting with our own physiology and our own soothing system. And it definitely is cultural. You know, I think, you know, it's the Dalai Lama was kind of quoted to have said, to have been totally confused by the fact that Westerners were not compassionate to themselves, because he was like, how does that work? And of course, well, it kind of doesn't, does it? You know, so of course, if our own soothing system is disabled, then it's also more difficult then to be with other people's pain as well.
I'm Jess Davidson, and today I'm with registered mental health nurse and mindfulness teacher, Kate Brandon Adams, talking about being your own mate and the science behind self-compassion.
So how does self-compassion then help with things like stress or distress in our lives?
So one of the really important aspects of self-compassion practice is actually how it's able to reduce stress. I kind of think of it as the missing link in stress reduction. And so, of course, there's lots and lots of things that we all do to reduce our stress. And I'm really passionate about getting self-compassion out there as a way to do that too. So, Jess, if I sat here and started calling you names, heavens forbid, what do you think would happen to your nervous system?
It would probably get pretty heightened.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't feel too flash.
No, I don't suppose you would. Yeah. So it would. It would activate your threat, which would be very wise and sensible response, because you would be deemed, your nervous system would deem you're under threat. Mm. Yeah. Mm. The problem is that, unfortunately, if you were sitting there calling yourself names and being unpleasant to yourself, you would also be activating your threat system.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So this, you can imagine then, wow, as how for many of us there's this kind of ongoing low-grade rumbling threat going on, which is actually coming from the inside, not the outside.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So I found that really, really important, that actually here I was doing all these amazing things to reduce my stress, but I was actually increasing my stress, activating my threat system by how I was treating myself. Mm. Yeah. And that you know, it wasn't innocuous, you know, it was doing harm. So, of course, that means that with the self-compassion practices is that we are then offering an antidote of, instead of being critical and judgmental, that we're practicing, you know, being kinder to ourselves. And also when we practice self-compassion, is we're releasing those chemicals that also reduce the cortisol and the stress levels, as we mentioned before. So Kristen Neff's research, I think, is really helpful in the fact that it's shown up a lot of the sort of barriers that people have to practicing self-compassion, and actually a lot of the time totally turn them on their head. Yeah. So what I mean is that, you know, often people be like, oh, self-compassion, it's kind of, it's all a bit, oh, I don't know, it's a bit mushy and weak, you know. But as you can imagine from the physiology that we've just talked about, is actually it makes us more resilient to adversity and stress. Mm. Yeah, so it's kind of the opposite. So rather than it being a weakness, it actually allows people to be able to deal with stress better. Yeah, because they're not having this rumbling, ongoing kind of threat activation. The other one that comes up a lot is that people are, you know, I'm a bit wary of the self-compassion because I think they imagine maybe that they're just going to lose their edge somehow. You know, they're going to become unmotivated. They're just going to be kind of lying around on the floor eating tubs of ice cream all day, you know. And again, the opposite is true. So she did a whole load of stuff around how self-compassion and motivation go together. So for many of us, we think of we motivate ourselves by being on our case, yeah. And what she found was that actually motivation was more effective if it was done through self-compassion rather than self-criticism. Mm. And so it's a bit like moving towards something because you care about yourself or you care about it rather than trying to avoid the self-judgment and self-criticism that you're going to get if you don't get there, yeah? So it's kind of countercultural, really, in a lot of ways. The other thing to think of is that it's very difficult to change something and learn something when you're in your threat system, yeah? Because we talked about with the brain and the prefrontal cortex and, you know, we're not in that part of our brain. When we're in our threat system, we can't think clearly.
Mm.
So therefore, it's going to make it harder to be able to make changes when we're in that threat system. The other one that the research kind of also showed up was around this idea that people have that, you know, self-compassion would make us really kind of self-absorbed and selfish.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that can be a really big one for people. And so, again, the research showed the opposite. What it showed was that if I'm able to be with and move towards and soothe my own difficulty and emotional pain, I have much more ability and capacity to be able to be with yours.
Mm.
So it allows people to be able to hold other people's pain and be with the pain of the world so much more. Yeah. So as, you know, to me, that's the opposite of being selfish. So compassion for self is really therefore at the root of compassion for others.
How did you get into self-compassion practice?
Mm. Well, to be honest, when I first came across self-compassion, I don't know, about 15 years ago, I wasn't very taken with it, to be honest.
Oh, really?
And what I see now, looking back with hindsight, is that actually what I was struggling with was my own conditioning, so my own cultural conditioning, which was giving a really strong message to me that this was selfish, this was kind of mushy, it was kind of really just not possible that, you know, not my thing. And so, I kind of gave it a bit of a wide berth, really. It made me feel uncomfortable, this sort of whole idea of self-compassion. And so it was interesting. It was probably a few years later down the track that I started to revisit it again. And this time I was revisiting it through a different lens because I then had been practicing mindfulness for a number of years. And so what was different was that with the mindfulness practice, I'd started to get much more clarity around how self-critical and self-judgmental I was to myself. So I'd really got to see it with my own eyes, so to speak, because the thing with mindfulness is that you get to see everything, yeah? You get to see your patterns, your habits, but you're getting to see it in a kind of a way which allows us to really get to see these things. And also, I realized actually how harmful it was to me. So I think before that, I was like, that's just the way it is. You know, I was brought up British. That's what you do. You kind of, you know, um, it, whereas I started to actually realise that actually this is not okay, this is actually harmful to me, and it's actually making me stressed. And so, you know, I was doing all these other things to reduce my stress, but I was still on my own case all the time.
Right.
The other thing that was different was that I now understood the role of neuroplasticity and how if we practice something, even if we don't feel it, it still changes us.
Mm.
And so this really gave me hope and understanding that actually this was changeable. I could actually be a little bit more of my own mate, so to speak. Mm. Yeah. The other side of it, as a health professional, is it was really, really important that I was able to have self-compassion practice. So in my clinical work, I was dealing with a lot of people's distress and pain day in, day out. And it's really, really important to be able to hold other people's pain. We need to be able to be with our own. And so from this health professional point of view, especially for people like myself that are high empathy and perfectionists, we're classic burnout material. And so, you know, the self-compassion practice then became really, really important. And, of course, now I've ended up doing a number of trainings and actually work with health professionals around bringing self-compassion to themselves and other caring professionals like vets and teachers and things like that. So, yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
Kate, how can I then start with becoming more self-compassionate in my life?
Mm. I really think, Jess, that, you know, a great place to start is actually by noticing how you treat yourself already. Mm. Yeah. Not as an opportunity to beat yourself up or criticize yourself, but as a curious observer of just noticing, how do you talk to yourself? How do you treat yourself? When things are difficult, you know, do you treat yourself like you would do a friend, or do you treat yourself differently? Mm. Yeah. And I think it's such a good place to start, is actually just noticing how we treat ourselves. And that then, if we can see how that is maybe creating stress for us or activating our threat system, that can be really motivating to be able to then actually treat ourselves a bit kinder. Yeah. The other thing that I think can be useful to start off with is actually just being really curious and more aware about what your barriers are. So we all have these. A lot of it, as we said, is to do with our cultural conditioning. So as people listen to this, you may even notice there'll be a whole lot of kind of arguments going on in your head about, I can't do that because of this, or, oh, no, that would be this. And notice those, because they are your clues of what's getting in the way of being more compassionate. Yeah. So that's a really, really helpful place to actually see what puts you off from doing it in the first place. And then I think, you know, it's in those moments when we're having a struggle of just asking that simple question of ourselves, you know, what would I say to a friend, or what would a friend be saying to me? And often we know that, yeah, but we, you know, it's just even dropping that question in and exploring what would that be like to treat ourselves in that way. And no doubt it will feel weird and clunky and wrong, you know, but, you know, it's like any practice. When we start it, it feels weird and clunky and wrong. Yeah. So, you know, I think those are some of the best ways to kind of start. And I think, you know, predominantly, you know, if you have a lot of, you know, difficult stuff in your life, it's really useful to do this work with another person rather than on your own. Because it can, some of the things that are in the way can come up when we do this work. So it is really, you know, I always recommend people do it with a clinician, with a safe person, rather than just on their own. And I think really, you know, fundamentally this practice is about recognizing our own pain and difficulty, what I call the ouch moment. whatever it is, you know. Doesn't have to be something big. You know, pain is pain. If it hurts, it hurts. Mm. And it requires some acknowledgement. And most of us are so good at just brushing off that as it not mattering. So there's lots of really good stuff out there, you know, on my website, on other people's websites around self-compassion.
Kate, I've learned so much listening to that. And I think it's a really key thing that you've pointed out, that you can't really look after everyone else until you look after yourself. And I thank you so much for your time and this amazing information. I am absolutely sure it's going to help so many people. Thank you.
I hope so. Thank you.
This podcast is produced by the Community Mindfulness Project in association with me, Jess Davidson, and Compass FM. The Community Mindfulness Project is a collaboration between Community Wellbeing North Canterbury Trust, Mindfulness North Canterbury, and Logan Smyth & Associates, bringing free science-based mindfulness and wellbeing courses, workshops, and podcasts to North Canterbury. Made possible by AIA Vitality.